ETF Prime is hosted by investment advisors at the ETF Store. This program is for informational purposes only and does not constitute investment advice. Investing in ETFs involves risk, including potential loss of principal. Any past performance figures discussed are not necessarily indicative of future results. The ETF Store is not affiliated with ETF.com or any of its affiliates. ETF.com's participation in this program should not be construed as an endorsement or an indication by ETF.com of the value of any ETF Store product or service. Visit ETFstore.com for more information.
Now it's time for ETF Prime, where we discuss everything you need to know about exchange-traded funds and the world of investing. Whether you're an investing expert or just starting out, Nate and Jason will help you get up to date on what's happening on Wall Street and show you how exchange-traded funds can help lower your investment costs, reduce your tax bill, and allow you to take advantage of investment opportunities around the world. And now, the host of ETF Prime, Nate Geraci.
Welcome to ETF Prime. Nate Geraci and Jason Lank in studio. As always, we are so glad to have you with us. We have an excellent show lined up today. If you joined us last week, you may recall we spent a decent chunk of time discussing how the old telecommunications sector is being renamed Communication Services, and this new sector is being broadened to include a number of new companies, including several rather prominent companies, companies like Netflix and Facebook and Alphabet. And not only do you have this new sector classification, but these changes are also, of course, impacting the sectors these companies are being shuffled out of, namely consumer discretionary and information technology. And all of this is impacting a number of sector-based ETFs. This week, we have sort of a part two to our conversation from last week. In just a moment, we'll be joined by Chris Donraj, head of U.S. iShares Investment Strategy. He's going to walk through a new suite of sector ETFs that iShares launched earlier this year. They're called Evolved ETFs. There are seven in all, and these actually use machine learning to determine which sector companies belong in. And Jason, when you think about it, these changes we talked about last week, you have these committees from S&P, Dow Jones Indices, and MSCI sitting in a room, right, sitting around a table, trying to determine which sector companies belong in. The question is there a better way to go about doing that? And that's what iShares is attempting to do with these Evolved ETFs.
The concept behind the suite of ETFs is really very clever. In fact, it falls under the heading of, why didn't someone think of this before? But you're right, the speed of technology and the business environment is rapidly changing in so many different directions. Does it make sense to have a more rigid, backward-looking way of classifying companies and just jamming them into a single box? Or do we look at what companies are doing today and maybe even look into the future of what a company may be and try to classify it that way? That makes so much sense to me.
All right. Now, later in the show, ETF.com's Drew Voris will discuss the best and worst performing ETF so far this year. Even though the financial markets haven't necessarily had a banner year, there have been some real bright spots. So we'll talk about which ETFs have outperformed, and we'll also look at the other side of the equation as well with the underperformers. And then for our ETF spotlight today, Chris Buck, head of capital markets and sales at Robo Global, we'll spotlight the Robo Global Robotics and Automation Index ETF. This is one of the more popular thematic ETFs. It owns the stocks of about 90 global companies involved in developing or utilizing robotic technology. This ETF now has well over $2 billion invested in it. We'll have Chris lay out the investment case for robotics. We'll dig into how this ETF is constructed. And we'll also look at some of the ETF competition that's moved into this space. As a matter of fact, iShares just launched a new robotics ETF last month, the iShares Robotics and Artificial Intelligence ETF, ticker symbol IRBO. This basically plays in the same sandbox. But Jason, robotics as a whole is a fascinating segment of the market.
Talk about changing technology. Yeah, think remote medical procedures. Your doctor's in another country and operating on you through robotics. You know, drones, of course, are everywhere now. You can pick up one in a 7-Eleven. You know, the conspiracy theorists will tell you that the robots are going to take over and eliminate all kinds of jobs. You know, I can't wait to get Chris's take on all that.
All right. As always, if you have questions or comments, you can visit etfprime.com or you can find us on Twitter at Nate Geraci and at Jason Lank. So last week, we went in depth on this change to what's called the Global Industry Classification Standard that's set to take effect in late September, where the existing telecommunications sector is being broadened and a number of pretty prominent companies are being pulled out of consumer discretionary and information technology to comprise what will now be called communication services. Let's now bring in Chris Donraj, head of U.S. iShares Investment Strategy. Chris is joining us via phone from New York. Chris, great to have you on the program today.
Great to be here. Thank you.
Chris, we covered this in pretty good detail on our program last week. But for listeners who may have missed that, do you mind first just quickly recapping what's occurring here with these sector changes?
Absolutely. So this fall, the telecom services sector will be expanded and broadened and renamed communication services. So what that means is that this new communication services sector will bring in names from the consumer discretionary space currently, such as Netflix and Disney. They'll bring in some names from the technology sector currently, such as Facebook and Google. So your new communication services sector will include all of these names.
Now, because of this, there are a number of ETFs being impacted, both by holdings moving out of existing sector ETFs, and then obviously with the creation of ETFs in this new communication services sector. Are there any iShares traditional sector ETFs being impacted? And if so, how are you handling that?
Absolutely. So most of our iShares products are going to be minimally impacted. The bulk of our sector ETFs do not follow the GICS methodology. There are a few industry and sub-industry funds that will be impacted, such as our technology IXN ticker, consumer discretionary RXI, and telecom IXV. But for the majority of our ETFs at iShares, because we do not follow on a large scale the GICS methodology, we'll have a minor impact. This applies to both U.S. sectors and global sectors.
And for the few changes that are being made, are those going into effect right after the final changes in late September?
Yes, that's true. They will come into effect late September.
All right, so let's talk about the iShares Evolved ETF lineup. These ETFs launched earlier this year. I might say perfect timing given these sector reclassifications because it really brings this issue of how companies are classified to the forefront. First, walk us through the lineup and perhaps explain the overarching idea here.
Yes, great. So come September, we will have this new broadened communication services sector. And ahead of that, iShares has launched seven evolved sector classifications. We've launched IETC, which is technology. We've launched two healthcare-related evolved sector ETFs, IEHS for healthcare staples, which is more defensive, and IEIH, which is innovative healthcare, a more cyclical-oriented healthcare. We have financials evolved sector, IEFN, as well as consumer staples, IECS. And then finally, we've broken up consumer discretionary in the traditional sense into two evolved sector ETFs, discretionary spending, IEDI, and media and entertainment, IEME. And I think the reason why we have really focused on evolved sectors as a new way to invest in sectors is really looking at the current model. Right now, under the current classification system, the methodologies to determine these classifications are backward-looking. They look at things like revenue, how a company has traditionally or started out being classified. And an example here is Amazon. Amazon started out as an online bookseller. And as a result, it was classified as a consumer discretionary stock. But this ignores the company's move in recent years into other industries. For example, the purchase of Whole Foods has now allowed it to have consumer staples exposure. It's done investments in healthcare. Its AWS platform for cloud is now technology. So the current system is very backward-looking. We have, at BlackRock, always prided ourselves on innovation. And the evolved sector really has forward-looking inputs. We use data science techniques, for example, to to analyze company filings, to see what a company is looking to invest in and is investing in, and allowing a better classification system to address that exposure.
Chris, how often are the individual holdings looked at to determine which sector they belong in?
So our evolved sectors will be rebalanced quarterly, and that gives additional flexibility as companies evolve their business strategies.
So as you touched on, these ETFs do use machine learning to determine which sector the companies belong in. Can you talk a little bit more about what's going on behind the scenes here?
Absolutely. So what we do here at BlackRock under our data science techniques is apply machine learning and artificial intelligence to look at company filings. And what we're doing here is really looking at how companies are describing themselves. How are they talking about their businesses? So there's much less of a marketing spin on how the companies are viewed. How companies describe themselves in these regulatory filings is often the most factual way, and analyzing the text of these filings allows us to better classify these companies into the industries that they are participating in.
Chris, this is Jason Lank. On that subject of using how companies describe themselves, can the system be gamed in any way? Can a company change how it names itself? For example, it's brewing iced tea this week, and next week it's in the blockchain business. Is there a fail-safe, or is there a mechanism to filter out perhaps some of the noise that companies may put out?
Great question. And, you know, this is why we're really focusing on the regulatory filings. Usually in regulatory filings, company play it much safer. They are not going to address anything that isn't, you know, a part of their core business strategy. So we really focus on the regulatory filings and the company filings to make sure we're getting an accurate representation of how companies are positioning themselves.
Chris, if we were to sort of boil this down, is the idea with these ETFs to try and provide as pure of exposure as possible to a particular sector? Is that ultimately the goal here?
I think that's the idea. Really what we're trying to do is provide the most intuitive exposure. Come September, for example, technology names will be spread across three sectors after this GICS reclassification. We're going to have Google and Facebook in communication services, this new sector we're talking about here. We're going to have Apple and Microsoft in technology. We're going to have Amazon in consumer discretionary. So an investor who's really trying to get the intuitive tech exposure can look at our evolved sector ETF for technology, IETC, and get all of these names. And an example here of why this matters, practically speaking, is if you look at technology as a sector in the past month, it was up about 0.5%. If you look at our evolved sector ETF, it was up 1.9%, and precisely because our evolved sector ETF, IETC, contains Amazon.
Chris, on the subject, one of the parts of the process that I find really intriguing is that a company can be in different sectors. If my understanding is correct, walk me through how that might happen. Like, for example, you mentioned Amazon is in so many different places right now in the world. How do we, is it appropriate to have them in one sector only, or do you really put them where they belong?
So I think putting them in different sectors addresses the reality that companies are investing across the spectrum. And this gives you a more nuanced view about a company looking at different product lines. So, for example, looking at the Amazon example, Amazon, according to the evolved sector technology classification, is 64% in technology and 36% in discretionary spending. This, in our view, actually describes the business model that Amazon has.
Again, we're visiting with Chris Donraj, head of U.S. iShares Investment Strategy. We're looking at the iShares Evolved Sector ETFs. Chris, there are currently 7 evolved ETFs, but I believe you have 12 evolved sector classifications. Might we expect some additional ETF launches at some point?
So right now, we are always looking at ways that we can offer innovation and differentiation, as well as addressing client demand. These 7 ETFs are the areas that we are focusing on now. We're always looking at new areas of innovation, but these offer the most differentiation, these 7 sectors, for evolved sectors versus the current offerings under the GICS classification.
Chris, we have a few minutes left here. We are talking sectors, of course, today. I'm just curious, given the upcoming reclassifications and just given the market environment as a whole, have you seen anything noteworthy in terms of sector flows so far this year?
We have. And actually, year to date, the tech sector has taken the lion's share of single sector exchange traded product flows. $14.3 billion have been coming into the sector. And I think what's really interesting, given these high rate of inflows into technology, is that most of those investors who are buying technology are not getting what I think people would traditionally classify as a tech stock, such as Amazon. So you're buying technology without Amazon, and I think this is something where the evolved sector approach, IATC for technology evolved sectors, gives you that intuitive exposure. What you expect to buy is what you're getting in the evolved sector ETF.
Well, Chris, with that, we'll have to leave it there. Really interesting concept with these evolved ETFs. We certainly appreciate your time today. Thank you.
Great to be here.
That was Chris Donraj, head of U.S. iShares Investment Strategy. And you can learn more about the evolved sector ETFs by visiting iShares.com. Let's take a break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by ETF.com's Drew Voris. We'll look at the best and worst performing ETFs so far this year. You're listening to ETF Prime. Welcome back to ETF Prime, Nate and Jason in studio. Let's chat with ETF.com's Drew Voris.
Time now for our weekly chat with the experts at ETF.com, the world's leading independent authority on ETFs.
People have been saying there are too many mutual funds since the 80s. For all the talk of smart beta, they haven't pulled in huge assets. The active managers are showing up in the ETF space.
Drew, great having you on the program. I have to note, making your ETF Prime debut this week. Welcome.
Thank you, Nate. I appreciate it. Happy to be here. Ready to talk some best and worst ETF performers of the year with you, Nate.
Well, so let's do that. And, you know, it's been an interesting year in the financial markets overall. Certainly not one where stocks have really been lighting the world on fire. But there have been some pockets of very strong return. So let's start with the good here. What has caught your attention? What are some of the ETFs standing out so far in 2018? And let's maybe start by excluding leveraged ETFs.
Absolutely. So those are more trading tools. These are pretty much the securities people buy to invest in rather than trade. And just for a benchmark, Nate, the S&P 500 is about 5.5%, which after all the topsy-turvy year that we've seen is not bad, but far below what we've seen in some of the top performers. And the themes here are really healthcare and internet, and you could almost say those are kind of domestic-based revenue type of companies. But off the top of the list is the Invesco S&P Small Cap Healthcare ETF. Ticker there is PSCH, up 35% this year. And we saw a bunch of small healthcare small caps, up top there, including the Invesco DWA Healthcare Momentum ETF, PTH, that was up 26%. On the other side, we saw internet stocks do very well. At the top of the list there is XWEB, XWEB, Spider S&P Internet ETF. That is up over 32%. And another interesting angle is also the internet retail ETF, Amplify Online Retail iBuy, up over 28%. So really here are some pockets of both small cap, internet retail, and also oil popping up in there as well. United States Oil Fund LP USO, which is a futures-based oil product, is up over 25%. We're also seeing another one, DB Crude Oil Long ETN OLO, up over 25%. And also two funds that I think are worth noting, not necessarily on the top, but certainly in the middle, is a company called ARK, A-R-K. They have a bunch of innovative ETFs, such as, for instance, the ARK Innovative Innovation ETF, ARKK, up over 26%. The ARK Web X.0 ETF, ARK The ticker there is ARKW, over 25%. And the reason I bring those up, those were two top performers last year, and they continue to perform. And what's interesting, those are especially the last one, ARKW, is an actively managed fund that had pretty high position in Bitcoin last year, over 10%. This year we saw it pull back. They actually reduced their position to basically zero in January, and that's when we saw Bitcoin slide precipitously and continues to slide. So they mitigated that loss by continuing to move away from things that they don't like at that point.
Drew, it's interesting to me that you mentioned the ARK Invest ETFs, because those really jumped out at me on the list of top performers. You mentioned the performance last year. They all had phenomenal years in 2017. I'm just curious, what do you think overall has been the magic formula for ARK Invest?
I think they're on the top of what is moving innovatively. And just like Bitcoin last year was something that was there and in the focus of people's minds, for whatever reason we saw a slide. So they're very nimble. So they're able to move in and out of their funds. Their funds are all actively managed, and for the listeners out there, active means they pick and choose securities, whereas a lot of our funds, like for instance XWeb, is an index-based, equally weighted fund that invests in stocks. So they're not really picking and choosing. It's really a rule-based fund, whereas ARK is an active fund. And you pay a little bit more for that, Nate, in terms of expense ratios, but that's what you pay for, is the performance. So sometimes it works the other way against you as well.
Drew, this is Jason Lank. One of the other winners was a commodity, cocoa. Now, I don't know how many investors have an allocation to cocoa, but the Bloomberg Cocoa Subindex Total Return ETN had a nice year. Is that a weather? What's a driver for cocoa? People eating more chocolate?
Absolutely weather. So that's the thing. Sometimes with these commodity ETNs and ETFs, you're really playing cycles. And cocoa is definitely a weather-related issue. It's primarily from West Africa, is the main cocoa region. So there are times where, whether it's weather or geopolitical events, can sometimes disrupt that supply line, just like we see with oil sometimes in the geopolitical world, in the Middle East, oil spikes. So the one thing about commodities, and I'll say this with everything I've said so far, past performance does not guarantee future performance. So especially with commodities, you have to understand it's very cyclical. And with healthcare and internet, we're seeing things that are kind of guarded against some of the trade tariffs and other things we're seeing. This is domestic-based revenue, so it's very strong. It's kind of protected, whereas when you start dealing with oil, cocoa, it's a whole different program. The fundamentals are very supply, demand, weather, geopolitical.
We're visiting with ETF.com's Drew Voris. Drew, as you mentioned, with leveraged ETFs, these are really trading tools are for sophisticated investors, so I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I'm just curious, anything noteworthy in terms of top performers if we include leveraged ETFs?
Well, excuse me, I think the one thing that just to let listeners realize that these are really trading tools, right? So, for instance, on the top of the list is something called REX VOLMAX Short VIX Future Strategy ETF. That's a lot of words. It doesn't make a lot of sense to people. Ticker there is VMIN. And what you're doing there is you're really playing on the volatility of the market. And it lost 90% because the volatility has been so low. But that's not something you buy and hold. It's something you're using on a day-to-day, not even through a day sometimes. Traders are hedging their positions. So the one thing I just want to caution people with, when you see these big returns, you have to be very careful about the time period you're looking at.
Drew, what about on the bond side of the equation? Obviously, it's been a challenging year for bonds with rising interest rates, and you're typically not going to find bond ETFs at the top of any performance list anyways, right? But anything noteworthy around bond ETFs?
I think the one thing that you have to keep in mind with bond ETFs, just like you said, you're not going to find them on the top list all the time or rarely. These are really more of the conventional buy and hold funds And it's really the single digits that you're looking for. And I think what we're talking about here are some of the biggest losers and winners. And the bond market is, to me, in some ways, something right in the middle. It's not something that gets really sexy or doesn't have a lot of big headlines to it. So in that regard, there's nothing that's totally standing out to me, to be honest, Nate.
All right, let's now pivot and talk worst-performing ETFs, and hopefully everyone has avoided these in their portfolio. Which ETFs are faring worse so far this year, if we exclude leveraged or inverse?
Yeah, well, it's really, it is, again, sort of the narrative you've probably been hearing. It's emerging markets are having a rough time. The dollar is strong. It's punishing a lot of the countries that are dependent on a weak dollar. For instance, single country funds. We have broad emerging market funds such as EEM, but really the pockets that are getting hit the most are real single country funds such as Turkey, for instance. iShares MSCI Turkey ETF TUR is down over 37%. Right behind it is VanEck Vectors India Small Cap Index ETF SCIF is down over 26%, and right behind that is Colombia India Small Cap ETF, SCIN, down 25%. So it's really not concentrated into a regional area, but some of these smaller countries who I should also say some of these, for instance, TUR back a couple of years ago was popping very well. So they, again, almost like the commodity ETFs, you get strong volatility. Some years they do very well, some years they do very bad. But right now, throughout the theme of the worst performing ETFs, and I'll just throw in some other single country funds, including Philippines, iShares MSCI Philippines ETF, EPHE, over 20%. A couple of years ago, that was a top performer. Argentina, Global X MSCI Argentina ETF, ARGT, down 20%. So it's not really isolated to a particular part of the world, but the smaller countries, almost like conversely with the best performers, they're like small caps. Okay, they're small countries, they're investable, but at the same time, a lot of it is dictated on the dollar. And you've heard about this all through the year, perhaps, you know, the dollar is gaining strength as these other countries are having troubles with not only just trade, but the stronger dollar. And so when that macro element starts playing up against them, it's really tough for them to fight the gravity.
What about China ETFs? Because China seems to be attracting the majority of headlines as it relates to a trade war. Has that impacted performance?
Well, that's a little bit of a mixed picture. That is the narrative. But also keep in mind that MSCI just included China into some of its developed country indexes. So there has been some money going into the China market. And, of course, now with the trade war and it's really starting to impact and the markets are now baking it in and realizing this is not just a bluff, it is a wary place to be right now. But nonetheless, it is, you know, one of the strongest economies in the world. You're going to have this tit-for-tat with this trade war. But overall, it's a strong economy. I'm not recommending anything, but again, it's not quite like Colombia. So there is a real economy behind there in how it weathers this trade war. We'll see.
Drew, back to the commodity space. You mentioned that cocoa investors were rewarded the first half this year. I also noted that sugar investors aren't having a good year. I'm assuming that's the, again, weather, what the weather giveth, the weather can taketh away in any given space.
Yeah, it is. And sugar is a little bit different. I have a little bit of a commodity background, and sugar is one of the supply, it's really supply and demand more than, and there is weather. You know, Brazil is a big sugar producer. And the U.S. subsidizes the sugar industry as well here. So it is one of those big commodities that you would think everybody needs. But again, as you said, it is really a supply and demand equation. And if you're going to get into that space, you don't want to be reading the headlines and moving into it. You want to really understand what are the fundamentals behind that commodity, which is a lot different than an equity because there's not earnings, right? There's not revenue. So with commodities, again, it's very, it can be weather, it can be supply and demand, it could be geopolitical. So it's a whole different matter of fundamentals. And I would just caution people, if you're going to do, most commodity funds are not geared for the typical buy and hold investor.
Drew, we have about 2 minutes left here, and I believe you began to touch on this earlier, but in terms of worst performers, if we include leverage and inverse ETFs, the story here has to be the inverse VIX products, right?
It is. And again, as I talked about before, it's really a function of the market. So we have seen low volatility. And what that means for listeners is the market isn't spiking up 500 points and dropping 500 points. And again, people buy these products to hedge their portfolios. So when there's not a lot of volatility, you could almost say that's a good thing because things are very mellow. So these products, again, are really hedges. These aren't something that people buy and hold. Like I mentioned, the VMI, that's basically minimal volatility, is down considerably. Because it's not, it is guarding against volatility, and it's not happening. So in that regard, people have to understand, again, just like with commodities, this is not buying Microsoft and holding it and looking 5 months later and seeing what the return is. If you do that, you can be shocked if you buy some of these volatility products and look 5 months later after you've been holding them. There's also resets with leverage and inverse. Every day, the prices reset. There's a lot of math behind it. You really have to know what you're doing when you get into these products.
Well, Drew, with that, we'll have to leave it there. Appreciate you joining us this week. Thank you.
My pleasure, Nate. Thank you.
That was ETF.com's Drew Voris. Let's take a break, and when we come back, Chris Buck, head of capital markets and sales at Robo Global, will spotlight the Robo Global Robotics and Automation Index ETF. This is ETF Prime. Welcome back to ETF Prime. Nate Geraci and Jason Lank in studio. Now it's time for our ETF Spotlight.
It's time for the ETF Spotlight, where each week we highlight one exchange-traded fund. There are thousands of ETFs available to invest in. ETF Prime has sorted through them all, so you don't have to.
The ETF we're spotlighting this week is the Robo Global Robotics and Automation Index ETF, ticker symbol ROBO, Robo. And joining us via phone from San Francisco to discuss this ETF is Chris Buck, head of capital markets and sales at Robo Global. They're the creator of the index behind this ETF. Chris, great having you back on the program.
Oh, it's great to be back, Nate. Thank you so much.
Hey, Chris, last we spoke, I believe a little over a year ago in June, Robo had somewhere around $700 to $800 million in assets. The ETF now has over $2 billion in assets. What's that been like, just watching this ETF grow so significantly over the past year?
Well, it's really been nice to see that investors, you know, since we last spoke, our ETF was up over 47%. So it's been a great investment for investors. And, you know, we have ETFs tracking our index in Europe, Korea, Australia, Canada. So we have over $3.8 billion in ETFs tracking our index. So it's been a great return experience for investors.
All right, so let's delve into this ETF. It owns around 90 companies involved in developing or utilizing robotic technology. Walk us through the index. How are companies determined? How are they weighted? Anything else noteworthy?
Yeah, so from a weighting perspective, we are an equal weight, essentially. Again, currently we just rebalance. We rebalance quarterly. We have, as year to date, we have 87 names, just at 90, and they're roughly equal weighted between 2% and 1%. And what we did is we defined the ecosystem or the supply chain, and by equal weighting across the supply chain in 14 different countries and 12 different subsectors, we're giving clients a diversified approach to investing from 3D printing, food and agriculture, manufacturing, artificial intelligence, across the whole, you know, ecosystem, if you will, in robotics, automation, and artificial intelligence.
And do these companies run the full market cap spectrum?
A really great point, yeah. So when we look at defining the universe and helping investors create in the robotics and AI revolution, we're taking best of class. So again, we take 12 subsectors and run through our index methodology, tracking thousands and thousands of stocks, bringing to fruition the top 87 names that fit within these subsectors. So you're getting the best of companies that have leadership positions, and 77% of our universe is mid-cap and small-cap. And what this means is these are names globally. 60% of the investments in this ETF are not in the U.S. markets. Yep, that's right. 60% of our companies are headquartered outside of the U.S. because that's where the innovation, unfortunately, is taking place currently. And they tend to be mid-cap and small-cap stocks.
Chris, this is Jason Lank. On the subject of the geographic distribution, it makes sense to me that technology in this space is a global one. But what stands out to me is the omission in that China doesn't appear to be in the top 10. And I would have thought United States leads the pack, and it does, and followed by Japan. Is that just the chips fell where they fell, or is there any reason why China doesn't make its way up the list?
Very good point. Very astute. 30% of the revenue that's generated for an index is consumed in China. As an example, China's going to spend $150 billion in the next 5 years to invest artificial intelligence. There is a robotics and arm race that is currently happening between Russia, the U.S., Europe, and China. And it's all steam ahead. What's happening in China is it's an emerging market. It's an ID market, so there's capital controls. So it's a very hard-to-access market. But we're currently working on positioning some China A shares in the index.
Chris, currently one of the top holdings in Robo is iRobot Corporation. Would you be able to tell us anything more about this company? I'm guessing this is probably a perfect proxy for the type of companies owned in Robo.
Yeah, and so because we're equal weight, on a relative basis, the top 10 names only equate to about 18 to 20% of the total value of the portfolio. So in any given quarter, almost any stock could be the top weighting, and I think it's probably just a little around 2% of the total fund value. But iRobot and consumer robotics is certainly going to be a very interesting and growing component of the index. Consumer robots like iRobot will continually grow. In fact, some of the growth rates in consumer robotics are really just ramping up as we speak. We're in the very early innings of this.
Is there another company or two in this ETF that you find particularly interesting?
You know, I think there's one. You know, again, the reason people invest in robos, we're very forward-looking. You know, to use a hockey metaphor, you want to skate to where the puck is going, not where it's been, you know, as Wayne Gretzky used to say. And one of the names that we just added to the index is a company called Ocado, and they're very interesting. They're based in the U.K., they have a market cap around $9 billion, so not a super big company, but not a small company. But they have, you know, essentially are the market-leading position in automated food and grocery delivery. They've just signed a contract with Kroger on May of 2018, and they're going to supply they're going to build out 20 new customer fulfillment centers across the U.S., and employ over 3,500 swarming robots that will prepare over 200,000 orders per week to help customer fulfillment. So think what Amazon does to, you know, warehouse logistics. This company is branching out globally to help fulfill customers' orders in groceries. So that's a great company.
Our guest is Chris Buck, head of capital markets and sales at Robo Global. We're spotlighting the Robo Global Robotics and Automation Index ETF, again, ticker symbol ROBO. Chris, I think most people listening to this show understand that robotics and automation and artificial intelligence are going to continue to play an increasing role in just about every aspect of our lives. But high level, can you maybe paint the investment case here in a little more detail? Why should investors have exposure to this space?
Well, you know, you really need to consider based on your risk tolerance. You know, Robo Global Index, you know, again, which is global, has about the same market risk as the S&P 500, which is very attractive, but it's growing at 3 and 4 times the rate. So the base case for investing, you know, what we like to say is future-proof your portfolio, is you're finding market leadership, you're finding the best-of-breed companies, and what's happening is there's been a perfect storm, if you will, why this is accelerating now and that most investors are underappreciating the growth curve. The computational processing power, the cost of chips, and if you can imagine robots with dumb brains, they're not really particularly useful in a bunch of different industries. But because artificial intelligence, the cost curve has come down and the performance capabilities of robotics and AI is to such a great extent, it literally is impacting every sector that we know. I mean, there's been people that would argue that robotics and AI will have 10 times the impact to society than the Internet. And that's a really big statement. And we're just in the beginning innings of the baseball game. So it's a really interesting investment case. There's a lot written about it. I encourage all your listeners to get very comfortable with the growth rates. And then the Robo ETF is, again, giving you the best of breed of the companies that you normally wouldn't know about.
Chris, a more of a technical question. With the very diverse geographic holdings around the world, many, many different countries, is there any merit to currency hedging? Is that something that the ETF does, that an ETF might do, or would it be really not necessary as diverse as the number of holdings are?
You know, it's very interesting because we are diverse, to your point. It kind of counterbalances itself. And, you know, year to date, the fund is down 4%, and 50% of that is from currency. If you look at what happened in the second quarter, you know, with trade wars and Asia and Europe, currencies weakening relative to the dollar, it can create a headwind. But over the lifespan of the investment, since inception, Robo has annualized a little over 11.5%. So we're not making a call on currencies, and we really just stick to what we know best, which is our 7 PhDs helping us understand what are the best leadership and position those in the portfolio. Over time, playing currencies is a very difficult trade, and I'll leave that up to the currency speculators.
Chris, you mentioned the large run the ETF had last year. It was up close to 45%. What about valuations in this space? Can you tell us anything about how attractive they may look right now?
Yeah. You know, after 10 consecutive quarters, it was about 2.5 years, Robo, again, is down 4% in this last quarter. And, again, it's come weakening economic, you know, conditions in Europe and Asia. And again, the dollars, you know, created about 50% of that. And on valuations, when we last spoke, right before the index and the ETF moved up 47%, on a forward basis, we were on a 21 times forward earnings estimate, and it's right where we are today. So despite being up, you know, 45% and, you know, 10 consecutive quarters going straight up, it's taken a breather. And we're right back where we started from. So it's an extremely attractive position. So by no stretch of the imagination has this been one of those investments. Gosh, I wish I would have done it. Now it's gone up so much, I'm afraid. It's actually right back where we started. And that's because the earnings momentum in these companies is so dramatic. Automation is ubiquitous. It's happening in every industry. It's happening now. And in our view, it's not likely to slow down for the foreseeable future. So valuations are extremely you know, this is in line with our historic valuations, right at 21 times forward.
All right, we have just a few minutes left. Robo was the first robotics ETF to market, but since its launch, we have seen several other robotics ETFs enter the fray. Can you maybe just do a little compare and contrast? How do you think Robo is differentiated?
You know, we're kind of a best of strategy. I think a lot of the other robotics are either super concentrated in a market cap weighting, so you're taking on a lot of risk in 10 different names. They're not as diversified. You know, there's one particular ETF that the top 10 positions were at one point last quarter, 70% of the portfolio. So you're almost better off just buying NVIDIA than paying the management fee for a particular ETF. In some of the other exposures, it looks like they threw the whole kitchen sink in there. Anything that had the word robotic in it, they just threw it in there and slapped the name Robo. We are extremely excited that the other issuers have kind of validated the space for investors. We think choice is extremely important based on your risk tolerance. But I think what it speaks to is how important firms like yours can help people understand ETFs and exposures. And it's not the name of the ETF that matters. It's really the underlying exposure. And I would encourage your listeners to really take a peek under the hood and really understand what they're investing in.
Chris, about a minute left here. I know you can't speak to potential future launches that may be in the hopper, but might we see some other ETFs from Robo Global at some point in maybe more narrow segments of the market? I know this particular ETF is global, but maybe something more internationally?
Yeah, we have 13 different indexes currently ticking, and we're doing a ton of research. You know, our commitment to you, we will launch no ETF until we've done our due diligence and research. You know, we really take it personal as a mission to help people invest in the robotic and AI revolution. And so we're spending a ton of time in spaces like artificial intelligence, coming up and really understanding the stocks and the names in the portfolio. So stay tuned. I think you will see several new ideas being launched, but just know they're going to be fully, fully vetted.
Well, Chris, with that, we'll have to leave it there. Excellent spotlight today. Congratulations on all the success with Robo. We certainly appreciate your time.
Oh, well, thank you so much for kind of, you know, finding us. Look forward to talking to you in the future.
Thank you. That was Chris Buck, head of capital markets and sales at Robo Global. Again, the ETF is the Robo Global Robotics and Automation Index ETF, ticker symbol ROBO. And you can learn more about this ETF by visiting roboglobaletfs.com. Jason, I thought Chris was tremendous there, laying out the investment case for robotics. You know, when you look at the robotics ETFs, these are some of the most popular thematic ETFs that are out there. When you look at the assets that have gone into these things over the past, you know, couple of years, I would say this has to be at the top of the list in terms of popularity. And I think that gets back to what we were talking about. I think most people understand the role that robotics and automation and artificial intelligence will play in our life moving forward. But I thought Chris did a good job of laying out why, even though we all know that, this can still be a very compelling investment opportunity moving forward.
I think so, too. So many investments that we all need, you know, don't light your eye, make you that excited. This is an area where you can just go down the list of the companies and the products they offer and the services. That's exciting stuff. It really gets your blood flowing. He gave us some good ideas about valuations too. You know, when you see an ETF, really any investment that's really had a run, you know, the question that every investor should ask is, you know, is this a good entry point? You know, did I miss the bus? I think he made a compelling case that the growth rate is so high that this is a reasonable entry point for people looking for, you know, another satellite holding for their portfolio.
Yeah, and I also thought it was interesting just hearing his perspective on some of the competition that's come into this space. I mentioned earlier at the top of the show that iShares has launched a robotics ETF. We know GlobalX has bots out there. First Trust has a robotics ETF. And I thought he did a good job of explaining why, you know, he believes Robo is a better holding. He mentioned that it's equal weighted. He mentioned, you know, so it's not quite as concentrated as some of the ETFs. It'll be interesting to see how the competition plays out in the space, because again, it is a popular segment. Now you have more ETFs entering this this market. So I think, again, fascinating area to watch. That'll do it for today's show. Podcasts of ETF Prime are available at etfprime.com, etf.com, and also on iTunes. You can follow us on Twitter at Nate Geraci and at Jason Lank. Next week, the topic is blockchain ETFs. Two tremendous guests for you. Brian Kelly, he's a CNBC contributor and also head of BKCM. He's going to spotlight the REX BKCM ETF, which owns companies involved in cryptocurrency and blockchain technologies. And then Eric Irvin, president and CEO of Reality Shares, will explain the first ever China blockchain ETF. Until then, have a great week, everyone.